From the land of the Grand Theatre Varsity in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of December, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Ben Brown from University of Missouri Extension and the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. We'll take up the continuing resolution that Washington was dealing with as we went into the weekend and managed to avoid a government shutdown. The Biden administration signing that bill into law, the incoming Trump administration having a great deal of influence on it, and of the 118 pages that you heard so much about, more than 20% had to do directly with commodity agriculture, specifically with corn, soybeans, and wheat. We'll talk about that, and then, of course, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too, with Mark Russo on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Ben Brown from University of Missouri Extension joins us on this Monday now to take a look at what's happening in the marketplace. Let's start with last week, Ben, because I know most of the ag economists and most of the brokers, for that matter, have looked at soybeans and said, you know, this is probably not going to be pretty. And then there was a really bad day last week. And suddenly, the next 2 days were pretty good. They gained everything back. I'm wondering what you think about the soybean market in general going forward.
Sure. So I think in the short run, and by short run here, I mean the next couple of months, I'm not overly bullish the soybean market. Are there things that could change that would create a bullish spark, maybe lead us a little bit higher? Absolutely. There always is those opportunities out there. But at least at the current point, over the next couple of months, I'm not really bullish the soybean market. And in fact, I'm more bearish and further deterioration. You know, as I've been talking with producer groups and farm meetings across Missouri and the broader region, one of the things I have been talking about is if things play out the way that I think they do, the price signals heading into planting are going to certainly incentivize corn acres. And of course, you know, maybe that's the case here this spring. But then when we get around to the fall, you know, if we do have fewer soybean acres due to that, or corn bids some of the acres over to the soybean, corn creates the incentive to where it takes soybean acres and turns them into corn acres, you know, that creates opportunities for maybe a little bit more of a bullish price pressure in the soybean market later in the calendar year. But I think here in the short run, there's a lot of things that are hanging out there that frankly are more bearish to the market than they are bullish. That's not to say that something bullish can't happen, but you know, we look at, you know, any potential trade disputes, any potential final ruling on some of the biofuel policies, and it creates an environment where, you know, it's bigger risk to the downside than the upside. And that's what's leading a lot of my thinking right now.
Yeah, I suppose that leads your thinking because you know very well that the marketplace is still focused on the old crop and won't even turn its attention probably to new crop. Maybe a little in February when the Ag Forum happens, but more likely not until the end of March when we get that first set of acreage figures. And the USDA reports, which will, I suppose, come out on the right day because we have the continuing resolution. No government shutdown. So January 10th will kind of set the tone for what we do going forward. How do you see those numbers changing, if at all, for corn and soybeans, maybe those wheat acreage figures too?
Absolutely. So, you know, something that's happened here in recent years, we used to always get the USDA balance sheets at the Outlook Forum in February, and that was kind of the first glance. It's been interesting the last couple of years, and I think this is just the second. I could be wrong by that. It might be three, but you know, now they're releasing those tables or some of the early tables in October and November, and so we kind of get an idea of where USDA is at least at the moment. We don't have enough, you know, history here to know if they're, you know, if big things happen within the marketplace that USDA then changes their baseline forecast or their, you know, their new crop outlooks in the February outlook meeting. But so we don't have a lot of history, I guess, is what I would say there to know exactly what's going to happen here. My expectation is I do think that the market's going to incentivize additional corn acres. And so, you know, whether USDA makes that adjustment in the outlook meeting in February, or if they wait till May, well, I guess it would be the prospective plans report at the end of March when they survey producers, but it, you know, officially come into the balance sheets in May. You know, there's some timing aspects here, but certainly I think we're going to be in an environment to where additional corn acres, I know it's a long ways out, and weather is just as, you know, volatile and fickle as markets are in a lot of cases. But, you know, at least the weather pattern certainly suggests that it's going to be a drier spring. That tends to hint at additional corn acreage as well.
So what do you think producers should be doing at this point?
You know, even though we do have January soybean contracts for that old crop market, you know, my sense is that there's, you know, well, and of course it plays out in terms of the trade, right? There's more contracts on the March futures than there are in the January futures. And so I do think that there probably are a couple elevators across the country and producers that are working with those elevators that are on January kind of contracts. They'll have to make some decisions very quickly about what they do with their product. However, it's my, you know, kind of belief, and it's playing out at least in terms of the volumes here, that, you know, most producers are in a March futures contract or have an opportunity to where they're pricing their local cash bids off the March futures. And so we got a little bit more time, I guess is what I would say, before a decision has to be made, whether you want to, you know, pull the trigger or if you want to exercise options, what have you in those spaces. So there's, you know, there's time. Time can both be a negative and a positive, depending on, you know, what it causes. It can cause to, you know, paralysis in decision making, to where people don't want to pull the trigger or undecided. And I would just simply say that, like, right now we're in this very tactical environment to where, you know, if there's returns in the futures market to signify or justify storage, you know, that's an opportunity. If there's not, which, you know, it's not like there's a lot of carry in the soybean market. There is some, but it's not like it's a lot. You know, we're not really making a whole lot of money by storing that product. And at least my concern, I've already hinted at it a little bit, is like my bias is I'm a little bit more bearish the bean market here in the short term. And so whether they should, you know, sell out of those positions or not, that's up to individual producers. But it's hard for me to see a whole lot of pricing opportunities here in the next couple of weeks.
On that note, I was looking over the weekend at the charts, and the January daily looks not so bad from last week. However, when you do the lead option and most active, which shows actually the March and then the continuous side, that one doesn't look so good.
Well, so yeah, so let me put in this bracket what I'm talking about. There's a 6 cents carry right now between January and March, 5.5, 6 cents carry. Most producers don't have storage cost, a 2 month storage cost below 6 cents, right? It's above. And in some cases, it might be quite a bit above that. And so, you know, the market's really not providing the incentive, at least on the soybean side, to store product. There are options and tools available to kind of, you know, I guess, take advantage of when the market does present options, private products with a lot of elevators and different things like that. But generally speaking, you know, it's, you know, not favorable to hold on to these soybeans a whole lot longer. And again, I have a bearish bias. I just want to make that clear, but it's hard for me to see this market going higher.
How should producers think about the continuing resolution from Friday night and the ad hoc disaster payments? Because we know that calculation is easy. It is not base acres, but it's planted acres, so you can simply do the multiplication very quickly. There's a lot of numbers out there, but, you know, between $28 and $31 an acre for soybeans and $43 or $4 for corn or something per acre. How should they consider that in their marketing plans and their ability to make sales?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, you know, on one hand, one side of me, if I'm putting my farmer cat on, it shouldn't make make any impact on sales. But it will, right? We all know it will. It'll, you know, when they do get made, there'll be, you know, an influx of cash into the market, and that frees maybe some producers up that we're going to have to sell product to generate some liquidity, that maybe they don't have to do that anymore because now there's an income source coming from a different place. And so, you know, it does change the, I guess, the financial capacity of individual farms and individual firms. It also has an impact probably in the basis market. If producers are not being forced at, you know, let's just say this springtime when they're starting to buy input costs and get operating loans, if they don't have to take out, you know, or if they don't have to sell grain to free up some cash to buy inputs, right? And that maybe causes the futures market to work a little bit, or excuse me, the basis market, the cash market, to work a little harder to bring that product into the elevator. So, you know, that's maybe how this all plays out. It is, you know, like, $10 billion is a lot of money. I don't have $10 billion. But, you know, it is a lot of money. You break that out all across the country, and it's hard to know exactly what this does. You know, we could guess as economists is what, you know, the impacts are. But, you know, I sit here and say I hope producers, you know, at least, you know, take some of this money and at least make smart financial decisions for the next couple of years. And the reason I say that is because, at least from my viewpoint, the next couple of years don't look great. and I say that knowing that I think everybody is aware of the situation, but it's just a nice reminder of, like, you know, let's you know, kind of financially secure ourselves to make it a little bit further down the road. That's not to say that we couldn't see another aid package. I don't know if there will be or won't be, what the Farm Bill, you know, support system looks like eventually. You know, there's been a lot of things that have changed how we think about, you know, aid, federal aid, over the last two decades. So I don't know how it fits into marketing plans, I guess is the short answer, or if it should. But it can make you feel a lot better about not making a sale or making a sale if you feel like you've got cash coming, or if you add that to your last year's sales and you're like, hey, my break even got a little bit higher all of a sudden from planting soybeans or corn last year. I shouldn't say break even. My return per bushel got a little higher.
I got closer to break even.
Yeah, you got closer to break even, right? Like, I guess that's the practical way of this, but. Yeah, that's my windy, like, non-answer committal response of, like, I don't know how this all fits in, but.
Well, the good news is we'll be able to ask you in person at the Illinois Soybean Summit on the 10th day of February, right here in Urbana-Champaign at the I Hotel. By the way, just so you know, we will rub it in, bragging rights, 2 years in a row. So when you
come,
make sure you wear all those Missouri colors, because I think we'll have something to say about it. Thank you much, Ben. We appreciate you taking time with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Todd.
Ben Brown is with University of Missouri in Columbus and with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. In today's agricultural news, just one story. The third time was a charm as the House and then the Senate passed stopgap funding legislation with farm and disaster aid to avert a midnight Friday government shutdown. Plan C made it across the finish line, 366 to 34 in the House, clearing a two-thirds yes vote threshold to speed passage and then to send the package on to the Senate for final okay as that midnight shutdown deadline neared. Farm groups led by the American Farm Bureau Federation prevailed in a last-ditch high-pressure campaign to include economic help for struggling producers, says House Appropriations Chair Tom Cole.
In the wake of many natural disasters and a difficult farm economy, our farmers and ranchers are in dire need of economic assistance.
Cole echoed the call of farm leaders that the aid was necessary to save family farms in danger of failing amid yet another extension of the 2018 Farm Bill.
This aid will mark a vital step forward and will help preserve family farms and ranches across the country while also continuing to ensure food and agricultural security for our nation.
The package also included $21 billion in farm disaster aid, but like the earlier failed bill before it, did not okay national year-round E15 sales. You may recall that last week I spoke with University of Illinois Ag Policy Specialist Jonathan Kappas while we were on the road with the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. This from Wednesday. The package for farmers other than the E15 did not change. Here are some of the details from Kappas.
So what we see tucked into this continuing resolution is funding for the federal government through March, an extension of the 2018 Farm Bill for another year. So the Farm Bill won't expire. It'll extend for another year. But the really big news, obviously, in all of this is the ad hoc disaster assistance package that was also included in this bill. The total amount is about $30.8 billion, one-time set of payments. $20 billion of that is designated for natural disaster losses in 2023 and 2024. So droughts to floods to hurricanes and that sort of thing. $10 billion of that will go out for what they're calling economic assistance or economic loss assistance payments. And this will be a one-time payment that is basically calculated using a gross return estimate per acre minus an economic cost of production USDA data. And then there's a 26% factor on it. It's paid out on planted acres in 2024 or plus 50% of prevent plant. So bottom line is we're looking at probably roughly $42.94 for corn and about $28-$27 an acre for soybeans.
Those two numbers may be a little lower than others you have seen. The FarmDoc team has not updated those figures with me, and they say others missed a calculation based on PLC yields. Again, the numbers about $28-$29 an acre for soybeans, planted acres, and around $43, roughly speaking, for corn. Here's how that was done, because the calculation there, too, is a little different than you may be used to seeing from the government, as it's related to base acres. This one was actual planted acres from 2024.
As we all struggled with in many farm bill discussions, we typically make these kind of direct cash payments on base acres to avoid any influence on planted acres. Now, granted, these are after the fact, so 2024 has already been planted, so it should influence. But it obviously, any time you put this amount of money into the farm economy, it's going to have a variety of impacts or consequences. And so there's always a concern that it might encourage planting of crops if they think there's more economic assistance down the road that would also be tied to planted acres.
By the way, both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, supported ad hoc disaster aid payments for farmers in the CR. The president-elect specifically asked that it be included, and the president signed the bill. As to what this might mean for the farm bill under the Trump administration, well, that's still not clear, says Jonathan Kappas.
What we do know is this kicks the farm bill another year, so the existing farm bill will carry through for another year. I think it's really tough to see an opportunity for the regular order process on a farm bill next year, given all that this next Congress is going to have on its plate. As we're talking about at the IFAS meetings here this year, a lot of this, what I expect to happen is budget reconciliation processes. That could consume the farm bill or consume parts of a farm bill. So it is really, really unknown what we will see in the new Congress in 2025. I think it's really hard to be optimistic that Congress can rewrite the entire farm bill next year. So we'll look at another extension if reconciliation doesn't take it over.
One other note, as it's related to both the disaster aid payments, which would be for the 23 and 24 crop years, there's about $21 billion there, and the $10 billion low price economic issue payment that we just discussed. Some farmers are really in favor of it, including their representatives across the board with the associations like the Farm Bureau and the NFU and the National Corn Growers. However, there are many producers who are concerned that these kinds of payments really do get pushed back into the farm economy in a way that simply keeps cash rent prices higher for longer than maybe they would otherwise. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. We're joined by Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Happy winter break, holidays, Merry Christmas, New Year's to you, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year's, Happy Holidays to all.
Okay, so let's talk about what's happening in South America. They have a great crop coming on. Are there problems in Argentina or Brazil? And you can start in either nation.
Yeah, we'll start in Argentina. That's the most noteworthy area in South America. Just taking a step back from a high-level standpoint, there are currently no major issues. as soil moisture is generally favorable right now across the vast majority of summer crop acreage. What we're watching as we go through the next couple of weeks, Argentina and to a lesser extent, southern Brazil, they're going to be in a drier mode with the driest conditions in Argentina. And along with this drier pattern will actually be the first significant heat wave of the growing season in Argentina. That starts to kick in over this upcoming weekend, continues through next week. So we are going to see a decline in soil moisture across Argentina these next couple of weeks. Southern Brazil, again, as I mentioned, is shifting a bit of a drier mode, but they just got really heavy rains and their soil moisture is actually surplus. So that's not of any concern there. So really the focus or area to watch is in Argentina with this decline in soil moisture.
The thing about that is that they're still very early in their season, and with many comments about La Nina and its potential to keep rainfall from coming, I suppose that's the worry there?
It is. With La Nina in place, again, historically, you can have these more extended dry and hot modes in the pattern during La Nina growing seasons. That hasn't happened this season until really now. So the question becomes, how long does this last? And as we see things right now, we don't see it lasting very long. In fact, there's pretty strong indications as we get into week two of January that rainfall will begin to return to Argentina and southern Brazil, providing relief.
Okay, in that case, turn your attention to North America. Looks like we're going to have not a white Christmas in a lot of the Midwest, but, you know, a pretty warm Christmas, apparently.
Yeah, we're beginning to see now temperatures begin to warm up, and over the next week to 10 days, it's going to be unseasonably mild here across the central U.S., including the Corn Belt. And also a generally limited rainfall pattern as well, and limited snow pattern as well. All the main snow looks to be up across really the Rockies and then the far northern tier of the U.S. But all in all, a pretty quiet, you know, non-eventful end to December here, given this very mild pattern.
Through the fall, we have talked a lot, and into early winter months, we have talked a lot about water levels along the Mississippi River. What do they look like today?
Yeah, things are improving here after what's been a bit of a roller coaster ride in water levels this fall. There's been actually several time frames where levels reached record lows in places such as Memphis or Cairo, Illinois, even down to New Orleans. What we've seen here in recent weeks is actually an improvement in rain activity, and that has helped to improve water levels. Not quite back up to normal, but then not far off in places such as Memphis. So it's an improved situation and should stay that way here going forward.
Thank you much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to hear us. I'm Todd Gleason.